Now,
And
you started out as a scientist, as a biology major and a science teacher, but you didn't stay in pure science for very long. What happened?
Right. Well, I would not call myself a scientist at any point in my trajectory. I did major in biology in college, and I loved it. I came late to it. I started what was supposed to have been a four-year major at the beginning of my junior year in college. That's a long story I won't go into, but I had been enchanted when I was in high school by science writers like Rachel Carson and Isaac Asimov and other people who could write about what might be considered arcane or esoteric or difficult by the general public and make it come alive and make me understand how central that those ideas and that information were to everybody's life. So when I went to college, ultimately, I wanted to gain some skills that would let me do the same. So I majored in biology, but then I went on to teach science in high school. And then from there, I ended up joining a graduate program at UC Santa Cruz in science journalism, science communication. So I've spent a lot of time trying to learn from practicing scientists about their research, about what they're learning, and about how they do what they do, and communicate that to the general public through newspaper and magazine articles. But I think over the years I've gravitated more and more toward a different sort of writing that's more a hybrid of elucidating science, scientific practice and concepts and information with my own more internal or aesthetic, more emotional exploration. So I think most of the essays in this book are kind of a hybrid of my science writing and of other things, and some of them are really purely internal and emotional and aesthetic and philosophical without so much science.
You do break the book into three parts. The first is creature comforts, and that's the most overtly scientific, although a lot of it just has to do with your way of perceiving the world. And then drawing lessons is more on the role of art in your life and in people's lives, but it is a pun, and you also draw lessons from encounters you've had. And finally, living together seems to be what it all is leading up to.
Yeah, I think that's true, and you're absolutely right about drawing lessons. Drawing lessons and drawing lessons. I meant it both ways, and I meant that section also to concentrate on questions about teaching and learning and education. A number of the pieces in that section have to do with the educational system or with the process of teaching and learning, something I've thought a lot about, I think, ever since I was in kindergarten, probably. You know how some people, as students, are self-conscious students, and they notice what their teachers are doing and think about the process of how they're learning and how that's either challenged and made more difficult or made more pleasurable and easy by what teachers and schools do. So I think a lot about that, and I think that's a big part of my interest in community, my interest in how teaching works and how learning works.
The essay that may have hit me the hardest was in the first section called Why Dolphins Help. In some of the others, you talk about people getting along in schools, in communities, in extreme situations like in Love and Dread on the Lifeboat, which we may talk about in a minute. But in Why Dolphins Help, you go right to the question of why some animals like dolphins will rescue other animals like humans that they have absolutely no other normal concerns with.
Yes, that essay in part came out of my experience that I think a lot of people share, standing on the shore looking out at pods of dolphins moving through the water, or standing on the deck of a boat and watching dolphins ride the bow waves, and thinking about those deeply intelligent creatures who are communicative and sophisticated in many ways and about whom we know very little, and just being filled with questions about their lives and their experiences. And then I had the wonderful opportunity to interview Kenneth Norris, who, as many people listening to this may know, was a wonderful professor of natural history at UC Santa Cruz. He had a long and distinguished career, and he was a very broadly educated, all around, and deeply knowledgeable naturalist who was interested in all kinds of things, from desert ecosystems to whales and dolphins. And he did a lot of groundbreaking studies on whale and dolphin behavior. And at the time I interviewed him, he and a colleague were involved in research and theoretical work trying to understand this phenomenon that people have seen for centuries, and they notice that dolphins tend to help each other. They will rescue each other. They'll take care of sick companions. And to ask, what is that apparent altruism all about? So that essay is based in part on my interview with Ken Norris.
And then in the second section, Drawing Lessons, you have an essay on interstate grace, on being helped out of a traveling emergency by the people you least expected would actually do it.
Yes. I'm really glad I wrote that essay, because the act of writing it and then now having it out in the world and being able to share it with people is a constant reminder to me not to make assumptions about people, something it's all too easy to do and that I do all too frequently. It's a reminder that people are frequently more compassionate and helpful and kind than we give them credit for.
And it seems to me that in those two sections, you bring up examples of how well people can live together, how well they can help each other. But then in the final section, living together, you concentrate more on the difficulties.
Right. I think the last essay in the book, the final piece in that final section, Love and Dread on a Lifeboat, was the most difficult of all the essays in the book for me to write, and I still have a feeling that it's not finished. It was with that essay where I was struggling with the whole notion of how we live in times of peak oil and peak water and peak everything, how we respond responsibly to those emergencies without giving up our sense of connection to each other and our joy in what we do have in this world. I really came up against some difficult thinking challenges, and for me, the process of writing that essay was the process of trying to become a wiser person. And I wouldn't say I'm there yet, but I think that essay, of all the pieces in the book, exemplifies what writing at its best can be as a tool for growing and pondering and moving forward and deepening one's own understanding.
Because in that essay you describe an encounter with people who have thought very long and hard about the ecological quandary we've put ourselves in and have decided that they are going to make it through. They are not your standard survivalists, though. They're not people out with concrete bunkers waiting and lots of guns, although they do mention the possibility of both of those. They seem to be very intelligent, cultivated people who, however, are more concerned with how they're going to survive than helping society pull together.
Well, that's the thing. It's such a complicated situation. Yes, these are people who are, as you say, intelligent, thoughtful, and in many ways I admire them a great deal. They are willing to acknowledge the dire situation that the planet is in, that our economies are in, that our politics are in, and that we are really spinning towards a desperate situation. And they've decided to live their lives as a response to those realities, which I agree are realities. And, you know, on the surface, they're not in interest of themselves. They're trying to teach and help other people to do the same, to build sustainable lives. And yet, this essay is about time that I accept with these people in their really wonderful sustainable enclave that they've been building. I thought that I would be heartened by the experience and inspired by it, and instead I found myself gradually filling with dread and realizing that there was a component of loneliness and a sense of being cut off from the world, that I came away with this sort of sense of horror from my experience visiting these folks, and I had to tease apart what that was about. And I think at heart it was about the attitude that predominated in that household, which was on the one hand full of, you know, wonderful activities, gardens and stored food and all kinds of old-fashioned technologies being reborn and a truly down-to-earth sustainable lifestyle in many ways, and yet there was a kind of fear and cynicism and a kind of bitterness that colored the whole experience. And I think it's really challenging for us to strike a balance between facing the very fearful reality of the world we're living in now and not succumbing to a sense of overwhelmed by fear. And I think, as the teacher, Buddhist scholar, ecologist, teacher Joanna Macy has often said, one way to do that is to begin with gratitude. And I think being cognizant of and grateful for the life that does surround us and each other as human beings and the much larger than human world that we share and all that remains of it, I think that's an essential piece of learning to move forward and to build a sustainable life if indeed we're going to be able to do that.
So I guess that brings me back to the essential question. What did you learn at Bug Camp?
So the title of the book refers to the title essay, which is, in a nutshell, about my experience at a five-week field entomology class. The only non-entomologist or entomology student among a bunch of serious bug folks. And that essay is about trying to figure out what it means to be deeply interested in scientific study and in natural history, but not to be a scientific naturalist. And so that became the title of the book, and I guess it's a stand-in for the fact that, I guess what I learned at Bug Camp is that, and how little I know, and at the same time, how gratifying, delightful, and exciting it is to keep learning in a lifetime in which I know I'll never learn a fraction of what there is to know out there. And that's what I learned at Bug Camp, and I think in a sense that's what the book is saying. The book is an affirmation of the process of the path of being a perpetual student and learner. And if I can share that, the pleasure in learning and a certain kind of open-mindedness and open-heartedness in relation to the world around me, if that has some meaning for people who read the book or listen to me read it, then I feel as if I'll have accomplished some little things.